Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lurs all over here.
I like that you're putting new stank on things.
This is going to be a spicy episode because I'm very, not drunk, but I'm toasty from the last episode.
My scandal was tough.
Yeah, I needed to drink.
Mentally and emotionally. So we come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. A nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we'd like to acknowledge that. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Show is. Show enough.
Thank you. I'm just like, you just hit the wrong note, yes, and I forgive is. You. What?
It depends on your definition of the word is.
We be drinking and we be swearing.
Fuck yeah.
And we be arguing semantics.
It depends on what your definition of the word yeah is.
You sound like a straight white man right now.
Yeah, I do. So today we were drinking a cocktail called a Stone Fence.
Oh.
Yes.
What a weird name.
Mm-hmm. In the 1770s. At the Catamount Tavern, which is in what is now known as Vermont, was Ethan Allen's home bar, his favorite bar.
Wait, Ethan Allen, the catalog?
The catalog is named after this actual real human man.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wow.
He's a Revolutionary War hero.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know.
The Catamount Tavern was also the headquarters of the Green Mountain Boys, which was...
Wait, are you sure he's not a lifestyle brand, though?
He's both. It can be both.
Yeah.
He can be both. The Catamount Tavern was headquarters to the Green Mountain Boys, which was a militia group that was commanded by Ethan Allen. Legend has it that the night before the pre-dawn capture of Fort Ticonderoga from the British in 1775, Ethan Allen, Benedict Arnold, and the Green Mountain Boys were at the Catamount Tavern drinking round after round of Stone Fence cocktails, which were made at the time with hard apple cider and shots of dark rum.
Hmm.
They got reportedly, or legend has it, they got so good and tanked on these Stone Fence drinks that the next morning they just walked up to the fort, walked in the front gates in the early morning hours of May 10th and took it over. They just walked right in because they were so shit-faced that they were like, we don't need to be cautious. We're just going to take this shit.
Yeah, this is ours.
The fort was...
Everyone agrees this is a good idea.
Yes, exactly. The fort was shorthanded at the time. They were waiting for British reinforcements.
Oh, perfect time.
So there was only one sentry on guard in these... It was like, I don't know, something like 4 or 5 in the morning when they rolled up.
Mm.
And these, like, there were like 400 Green Mountain Boys just walked in the front gate. And there was this one sentry just standing there like, oh, fuck. He panicked, his musket misfired, and then he ran away.
I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
He made the right choice.
Yes. So after this, Ethan Allen and his troops easily overtook the remaining soldiers who were still asleep at this point.
Oh, okay.
He demanded their surrender, quote, in the name of the great Jehovah and the Continental Congress. And that was that.
Hmm.
They took Fort Ticonderoga. This was actually the first American victory in the Revolutionary War.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And it might not have happened, at least not in the way that it did, if it were not for the Stone Fence cocktail.
Patriotic.
Yes.
The patriotic Stone Fence cocktail. Mm-hmm.
After they took the fort, of course, they looted the place looking for liquor and provisions. So the Stone Fence is a colonial New England classic. It is probably named after the stacked stone fences that surround a lot of farmland in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And in the days of Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, it was made with a tart, homemade, like wild fermented hard cider and dark molassesy New England rum. Because there was so much trade with the Caribbean at the time.
Yes.
Bourbon hadn't even really been invented yet at this point. And molasses was the easiest thing that they could get their hands on to ferment, to mm-hmm. turn into liquor. So rum was by far the liquor of choice for, especially for New England
yeah.
at the time. Over the years, the cocktail sort of started to evolve. About a century later, when Jerry Thomas published a recipe for a Stone Fence, his Stone Fence recipe featured sweet non-alcoholic pressed cider and bourbon whiskey.
Okay.
I have made plenty of bourbon and cider cocktails in my years, never knowing that they were supposed to be called a Stone Fence. I had no idea. And they're fucking delicious.
Yeah.
Bourbon and sweet cider. Goes hell yeah.
So well together. So good.
Yeah. So in the fall, you put one of my favorite things for like a party trick was to put a gallon of hard cider into a crock pot and heat it up.
Hmm.
And then like add, you know, cloves and cinnamon and shit to the pot of cider and just have it warm and then have like a big jug of bourbon next to it. And people could do warm cider with bourbon.
Wow.
So fucking good.
So good.
Never knowing that it could be called a stone fence. And that in the 1800s with Jerry Thomas, that was what a stone fence was. But today we are drinking the original colonial New England version, which was made with dark rum made from molasses and this sort of tart, funky, full-flavored hard cider.
Yeah, it's definitely funky. I tried some on its own.
The cider.
Like, what do you mean by funky? And I'm like, oh.
It tastes like kombucha. It's
yeah,
like a,
totally.
Yeah.
We should cheers.
Cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
It's not great.
Okay. Yeah, not great.
You can taste the molasses for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that cider is, I think if you used a different cider, if you used something sweeter, it would taste a lot better.
It doesn't taste bad, but it doesn't taste good.
Yes, exactly. I don't love it. I would never order this on purpose at a bar.
Absolutely not.
But I'm glad that we're trying this sort of like more traditional
1700s
version, just to sort of get a sense of what they would have been drinking back then. The cider that we are using today is a wild fermented, unfiltered raw cider from Brooklyn Cider House made with heirloom cider apples from New York State. As I said, I think that it would potentially be much more palatable for modern tastes if you used a sweeter cider because that rum needs maybe even just if you added a little sugar to it, like a simple syrup or something. But you could easily just use a sweeter cider.
Or even just a cider that's not as funky.
Yeah.
It's really the aftertaste for me that I'm not into.
I think it's the rum because it's so molassesy. The rum, it almost has a sort of a like a blackstrappy sort of salty flavor at the end.
Totally.
It's not great.
No.
I will drink it because it has licka in it.
Licka.
Brown licka. But yeah, this is not my favorite thing that we've ever had. I might switch to something else at the break. I wish I had some sweet cider, some like pressed cider.
It would be nice to have just a regular cider that tastes good.
Yeah
Because it melts so well, as you said, with any alcohol.
Yeah, like, that's I would try, you know, I've had it with bourbon before, but I would be interested in trying it with this dark molassesy rum, too.
Yeah, no, rum is spicy. Yeah. It would be delicious, I'm sure.
But today, for this, at least for the first half of this story,
we're drinking this. This feels very historical.
Yeah, I wanted something that tasted as close to the original, like, 18th century version of how they would have been drinking this as possible. The one difference, though, is that
ice. Right.
We're not drinking this lukewarm.
Ew.
We're putting ice in this.
Ew, the horror.
This is the year of our Lord 2021, and I have a freezer full of ice, and we are using it. We're putting that ice to good use.
You don't need lukewarm, funky cider. Could you imagine how it tastes lukewarm?
Yeah, no.
No, thank you.
So let's get into the story. There has been a lot of talk in the past few months about vaccine mandates. Back in September, President Biden announced that companies who employ over 100 people have to have their employees vaccinated against COVID-19 or offer weekly COVID testing, because these companies need to make sure that their unvaccinated workers aren't running around spreading a cloud of disease in their wake like Pigpen from Peanuts.
Yes.
But after this announcement was made, the media promptly lost their collective shit, calling this a vaccine mandate, which, of course, it's not. Employees have the option of doing their patriotic duty and getting vaccinated to protect their fellow Americans or being tested for COVID-19 once a week, which is not enough.
No. My sister's job, they're tested once a week. She said most people are vaccinated, and my sister is also vaccinated, and she gets tested once a week, which is great.
If you're vaccinated, both. I think once a week is enough.
Yeah.
If you're not vaccinated, you should be tested every day before you walk into the office.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. But that's not what this law is mandating. But either way, no one is being forced to get vaccinated if they don't want to under this law that Biden announced, or mandate that Biden announced. But details like that don't make for good television.
No. They're trying to sell vacuum cleaners.
Exactly.
They got to get the eyeballs.
Yeah, so the media has run
they
with this.
They need to get the eyeballs and the eyebrows.
They do.
Like, huh?
Yeah. Yes. That's how you sell vacuum cleaners, yes. With eyebrows. So they have run with this vaccine mandate narrative, despite the fact that it's not actually fucking true, prompting many an ill-informed, freedom-loving American to whine and moan about their personal liberties being violated. And one of their favorite arguments is that the Founding Fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they knew that the President of the United States of America was forcing people to be vaccinated against their will.
They know nothing about the Founding Fathers. It's really kind of sad. Yes. And also embarrassing. It should be embarrassing.
They literally know nothing.
Like, ew, you guys, shit.
So today I want to talk a little bit about how the Founding Fathers might have felt about vaccines and vaccine mandates.
Okay. It's with a heavy heart.
Yes. So vaccines hadn't yet been invented in 1776, but inoculation was a very common procedure by then. If you don't know, inoculation was the precursor to vaccination, but both of them, they're very, very similar procedures and very similar concepts. Both activate a recipient's immune response and protect against the disease most of the time. Mm-hmm. So today I'm going to be sort of using these two terms interchangeably, even though technically they are slightly different.
Okay.
They're very, very similar.
Which though. One has the microchips?
That's the Microsoft vaccine.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes.
That's Windows 95.
Yeah, Windows 95. That's your fucking Apple iPhone that you have in your pocket on you at all times of every day. Thank you very much.
That also decreases your sperm count. Yes. Look into it and be really terrified.
Just like COVID. But not like vaccination. I'm not just going to be talking about the Founding Fathers' views on vaccines and inoculations today. I am also going to be talking about America's first anti-vax movement.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes, it happened for very dumb reasons.
Oh.
Surprise, surprise.
Wait, that's so different from today.
I know. And I'm also, this is a little bit of a hodgepodge episode. I'm throwing a bunch of things together.
I love it.
They all work together. I'm also going to be talking about the black man who deserves credit for bringing the idea of inoculation to the New World in the first place.
Burn him.
Yes, exactly. And shockingly,
he's a witch.
For that reason, he has largely been written out of American history until
imagine
very recently.
That.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Shock of the day. But before any of that, I would like to propose a toast.
I'm already so upset.
With this not very good cocktail.
Every time you say something and I roll my eyes, I'm like, I'm going to drink. And then I have a sip and I'm like,
oh no, what have I done? I want the Pisco punch instead.
I punished myself. Cheers.
To doing your patriotic duty and getting vaccinated, and not just for COVID, for every vaccine that medical science can throw at you. Please get vaccinated for COVID.
Yeah.
But also get your flu shots and get any vaccine that you are not up to date on.
Yeah.
Because vaccines save lives. Do it for your own good, and do it for the good of your family, your friends, your neighbors, and do it for the good of the country.
Yes. Hear, hear. Cheers again.
Oh, I wish this was better. Okay, so let's get into this story. So, picture it. Boston, 1706. You may recognize the name Cotton Mather from the Salem witch trials of the 1690s. But by 1706, he was a prominent Puritan preacher in Boston, Massachusetts. And he was so well-loved and respected by his congregation that one day they decided to get together and pool their money and buy their pastor a very special gift. An enslaved African man.
Oh, wait. okay.
Yeah.
I was unprepared for that. I don't know what I thought you'd say, but that wasn't it.
Cotton Mather was like, oh my God, thank you guys so much. This is just what I've always wanted.
Who told? Who told?
A human person of my very own? Thank you so much.
Was he like in a box with a ribbon?
Or he was just in that like cello wrap, In a basket.
Oh my God. Yes, in a basket.
With some like apples.
Yeah.
So Cotton decided to name his shiny new human person Onismus, which was Greek for useful or profitable.
Okay.
He got this name from a Bible story about an enslaved man named Onismus of Byzantium, which at the time, many Christians liked to use this Bible story to justify the practice of slavery in their minds.
You use the Bible to justify your own prejudices.
Yes, exactly. So as time went on, it turned out, unfortunately, that Cotton Mather couldn't fucking stand Onismus. As a Puritan, he believed that it was his duty to convert the people he enslaved to Christianity, and Onismus wasn't fucking having it. He wanted to practice his own religion, and he laughed his ass off when Cotton tried to convince him that God was white.
That is hilarious.
He was like, are you fucking kidding me, you pasty, weak motherfucker?
Yeah, it's like, you die in the sun.
But not only did Puritan doctrine say that if everyone in the home, including the enslaved, were not proper Christians, that it reflected badly in the eyes of God, but Cotton had also written a book on how to convert the enslaved to Christianity. So he was big mad that Onismus was not fucking with his white Christian God. Like, this is not how this is supposed to go.
This is my bread and butter. I am a scholar?
Yeah. Yeah. Over the years, he said that Onismus was too smart for his own good.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And he wrote in his diary that he was wicked and thievish and could not be trusted.
I bet he could read.
Yeah. But so when Onismus told Cotton that in his homeland in West Africa, they had cured smallpox, Cotton thought he was a bold-faced liar. Like, you are full of fucking shit. Get out of my sight.
But you have dark skin.
Yes, exactly.
And I teach you all the things.
Exactly.
And we don't know how to do that yet. Even though life began where you live,
yes,
and you had a huge head start.
You couldn't possibly know what you're talking about.
You couldn't possibly.
I mean, his name is Cotton.
I rest my case.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So smallpox was a very serious problem at this point in the colonies, at this point in history. A, it was extremely contagious, and B, it killed between 15% and 30% of its victims.
Yeah, whoa.
It would start with this fever, headache, and fatigue, but after a few days, you would develop these little red dots all over your body, and eventually those dots would swell to these blister-like, raw, oozing, smelly pustules that could cause permanent blindness if they got in and around your eyes. If you were lucky enough to survive smallpox, the pustules would eventually scab up over the course of a few weeks, and they would eventually fall off, leaving you with these deep, pitted, permanent scars all over your face and body. So I actually have some pictures here.
That you're not going to show to me.
I'm about to show you.
Going to look away.
That's what smallpox...
Nope.
Yeah.
Not into it. Oh, yuck. Ew.
Yes. This is sort of late stages as they started to scab up.
I mean, like freckles, but in a crazy way.
Yeah, you need to look closer if you think that looks like freckles.
Okay, don't. It looks nothing like freckles.
So this is a sort of later in history. This is a picture of two people, one who was vaccinated and one who was not. Obviously, this was done for science. It's unfortunate that the boy who was not vaccinated, but this is... They were both exposed to smallpox at the same time.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's scary.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say this, but it reminds me of that like, Nickelodeon product.
It was like GAC or something?
It wasn't GAC, but it was, like, the other one.
Phloem?
That was, like, rocky and weird.
Phloem.
Was it Phloem?
It was, styrofoam foam with GAC mixed into it. Yeah.
It reminds me of Phloem.
Yeah. And so this is a person who survived smallpox. This is what his face looked like after surviving smallpox. Oof. How pitted.
That's and like, scary.
Yeah. And this is actually a statue that was made of a man who had survived smallpox.
Wow. Great wig. But terrible face.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll put all those on our Instagram.
How dare you make me look at
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. Take another drink, if you dare. But so, because smallpox was so contagious and so often deadly, it was really...
And ugly.
Yes, yeah, a very unfortunate looking if you survive smallpox. Because it was so contagious and so often deadly, it was really common for enslavers to ask the people that they enslaved if they had ever had smallpox before, because those who had and had lived were considered to be more valuable because they couldn't catch and spread the disease and they wouldn't die, causing the loss of their enslaver's investment.
Yes.
So Cotton asked Onesimus if he had ever had smallpox, and he said yes and no. And Cotton was like, well, what the fuck is that supposed to mean? Onesimus said that before he was kidnapped and enslaved, when he was living in West Africa, he had been deliberately exposed to smallpox, and he showed him a small scar on his arm. He said that his people would do this procedure where they would cut a small cut in your arm, and they would put the pus from an infected person into the cut, into the open wound on your body. People infected this way would get a very slight infection, but not very bad, and afterwards they would be immune.
Yeah.
They wouldn't get smallpox after this. What Onesimus was describing, of course, was inoculation, but Cotton had never heard of this before and didn't believe him. But he was fascinated by the idea that this was possible, even though at the very same time refused to believe that an African man could know something about medical science that he himself did not. Couldn't accept this was possible.
That's just the culture.
Yeah.
It's like, these people are inferior because I have lighter skin.
Yeah.
That's
I've
my
never
culture.
Heard of this. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I don't know, therefore it can't possibly be true because I know everything.
Yeah. But at the same time, he somehow knew that it could because he never stopped thinking about it. It was always there.
Well, clearly,
just on the back.
Onesimus was smarter than him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't want to admit it.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, he
knows
too much.
He knew he was very smart. He wrote about it all the time about how smart he was and like was
so
like.
So many white people just like stole things that black people told them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't believe you, but also what you're saying makes sense. So
totally.
Let me just run with it.
Yeah.
And then I made it. I did it.
Yes, exactly. Because it was Onesimus's idea, he never actually acted on it until years went by. But then in 1716, he actually read a report from a doctor in Turkey, basically confirming Onesimus's story, saying that they were doing inoculations in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh,
well, then.
I had this in my head the whole time, and I should have done something about it, but I didn't. Because I couldn't let myself believe that a black man knew something more about medical science than I did. But the fact is, in addition to being common in West Africa, inoculation was common practice in Turkey, India, and China. Had been done for centuries in China.
Yeah.
It just hadn't caught on in Europe yet, or the colonies.
Yeah.
So that same year that he read this report from this doctor in Turkey in 1716, he also agreed to let Onesimus buy his freedom.
Oh, okay.
But only on the condition that he also save up enough money to buy another enslaved man to replace himself.
Hmm.
So he made him buy his freedom back and buy another enslaved person.
That's fucked up.
It's bullshit.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's so devious and fucked up, but you know.
He's a Puritan preacher.
It's Cotton.
Yeah, exactly. His name is Cotton. Let the record reflect.
Sounds like Cotton.
Yeah, literally. Yes. So we don't really know much about what happened to Onesimus after this, but we do know that until very recently, he has been written out of American history and written out of the story of how the concept of inoculation came to colonial America.
Mm.
Most of that credit, of course, goes to Cotton Mather and a friend of his instead. This is America.
Yep. I wish I was shocked, but I've heard so many similar stories.
Yeah, of course.
Of inventions.
Yeah. And Cotton sort of gets this credit for bringing inoculation to the New World because Boston had been through 5 smallpox epidemics in less than 90 years.
Oh, I do know this story a little.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. What they did in Massachusetts.
Yeah. So in less than 90 years, they had been through 5 smallpox epidemics at a time where, like, the population was nothing.
Yeah.
There was barely anyone even
so
there.
So
they
would, like, rip through
the
6 people that
they
had.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Everyone was scarred.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So once Cotton got confirmation that inoculation was something that could actually work, he decided that he needed to spread the gospel of inoculation to the medical community in Massachusetts. Unfortunately, no one...
Was he a doctor?
No, but he was a preacher, but like...
There was no medical schools.
Yeah.
It's just like you learn by like...
Literally the only people who had actual like medical certificates were from England. No one was taking him seriously. No one wanted to believe that this was possible.
Yeah.
In 1721, there was yet another smallpox epidemic. So there are sixth in less than 100 years in 1721.
That's significant.
So Cotton decided to write a pamphlet laying out the whole procedure, how it worked. Even though he'd never actually performed it before, he thought that he knew about it because he had heard it from a black guy that he once enslaved. Yes. So he wrote out this whole pamphlet and sent it out to doctors across the city. But despite being one of the most respected people in the entire state of Massachusetts, no one responded.
Mm.
But one doctor was kind of intrigued and decided he needed to see what was going on. His name was Zebadiel Boylston.
Ooh, Zebadiel.
Yes.
I love that.
So Zebadiel Boylston was curious to see if this technique could really work, because obviously smallpox was a serious threat to the entire city. Yeah. So he decided to test it out. Do you want to guess who he tested it on?
His oldest daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Nope. His two enslaved men.
I am shocked by this, Tux.
In America?
Come on.
Medical experiments on black bodies? I never.
I'm going to have to look into this.
Tuskegee much?
I'm going to have to do my own research because I need to stop making jokes about this. But I make them all the time because shit's hilarious. I like that your headphones, Tux's headphones flew off his
body. Fully flew when I off said, my body and fell onto my dog.
To do my own research.
Oh, I was just thinking about the Halloween like tombstone that people were putting in their yards that said, I did my own research.
That, I don't know. I make jokes, but at the same time, it's like, it's really not that funny at all.
It's fucked up.
Because people are dying.
Yeah.
People are dying and they didn't need to die. They could have just got the vaccine and been alive.
Well, you shouldn't be laughing at people's misfortune.
Yeah, you sent me a meme like he died doing what he loved, his own research. I laughed, but then it's like...
But you chose to do this. You chose to do your own research instead of just getting a life-saving,
it just makes
free...
It makes me sad. Yeah, free. Yeah. The first and only time you can get free healthcare in this country, you're just like, no, thank you.
Yeah. That's socialism.
I'm doing my own double-blind research right now. Yes,
exactly.
I am in the middle of it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, though, that it's like you shouldn't be laughing at people dying because of their own stupidity, but like...
It's not okay, and they're going to continue to die, and it makes me really sad.
Yeah.
Really, really sad. I'm sorry to bring the vibe down.
Oh, you've ruined my whole story.
I have. I've ruined Tux's whole story with reality and having empathy.
Yeah. But our friend Zebadiel here, he tested it out on these two enslaved men, but he also did test it out on his own 6-year-old son.
What?
Yeah.
How?
I assume, I did not see this in my research, so I could be pulling this out of my ass, but I assume he tested it out on these enslaved men first, and then.
Yeah.
The research that I did not say that.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am assuming that's
your
how it went.
Your 6-year-old son, too?
Literally, yeah. But however it happened, however it went down, whatever happened, it worked. None of these people experienced anything more than a brief, mild illness that they recovered from and then were immune to smallpox.
Mm.
So these were the first known inoculations ever performed in the world.
But how were their testicles?
Swollen as fuck.
I like that I'm just like, we shouldn't laugh at this, but then I like laugh at other ridiculous misinformation.
Yes. Well, that's because he had an STD, not a vaccine. But that's besides the point.
We're talking about Nicki Minaj. Yes. Look into it, but also don't look into it because it's stupid and
y'all know.
It will ruin your mind.
Yeah. So after this, Boylston decided that he needed, you know, he knew that it could work and it was time to take this news public. The problem was, Cotton had made one very critical mistake when he published these pamphlets and sent them out across the city. He told the truth about getting this idea from an enslaved African man. So the people of Boston were like, are you fucking kidding me? Absolutely not.
No.
What is wrong with you? Why would we inject ourselves with smallpox because an African man told you to do this?
This is obviously a trick.
So Cotton was, quote, mocked and scorned for having relied on the testimony of a slave. His fellow ministers in the state called his idea sinful, saying that it was against God's will to expose his creatures to dangerous diseases. And at one point, the fury...
I love how God's will is just like their feelings.
Whatever also. They decide is the right thing to do is God's will.
Like, I've talked to him and he agrees with me.
Yeah, exactly.
We both agree that this is sinful and wrong.
We both agree that Catholics are the fucking worst.
Yes.
And black people suck.
And we also need to kill all of the Native American people. It's God's said so. Will.
Yes.
And we are God abiding.
Yes. So at one point, the fury over this whole situation got to such a point that a mob gathered outside of Cotton Mather's home and was throwing rocks through the windows. And someone even threw a crudely constructed grenade through his front window into his home. The grenade did not explode because clearly this fucking white dude didn't know what he was doing. But when it was found, it had a note attached that said,
That's amazing.
Cotton Mather, you dog. Damn you. I'll inoculate you with this. With a bomb.
But if it went off, the
you would never see this note.
Okay.
Wicked smart.
Wicked smart. It was essentially just a brick. He knew it was not going to go off. He just wanted to say some mean things.
So there was a man named William Douglas who happened to be the only man in the city of Boston who had an actual medical degree from England. And he believed that this whole thing was a secret plot by enslaved Africans to kill their enslavers by tricking them into infecting themselves with smallpox.
Yeah.
This man was America's first ever anti-vaxxer. And
medical professional, too.
Yes, he was the only person in the entire city that had a medical degree.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of what has happened recently. It's put it into perspective.
Yeah, totally.
Just like, you can have a degree all you want.
Totally.
But it's all just how you feel.
Exactly.
Almost a decade worth of study goes out the door when you feel a certain way.
Exactly.
Which I love.
Yes. A lot of people agreed with what this man had to say, including a newspaper publisher named James Franklin, who totally agreed and started secretly printing pamphlets in his newspaper publishing business, but like in secret, didn't want the paper to be associated with what he was printing and sort of secretly distributing basically pamphlets promoting anti-vax conspiracy theories, saying that Africans were trying to kill all the white people by giving them smallpox.
But why would they do that though?
I can't even imagine.
I don't know why they do that.
To be enslaved?
Are they being treated badly?
I thought that they liked being civilized.
I'm very
civilized.
Civilized. I love that. Thank we you. All love to be civilized.
Yes.
Most of us at least. We love it. We can't get enough of it.
I wish that I were civilized.
One day.
So he starts printing these pamphlets and handing them out in secret all across the city. And obviously the white people across the city of Boston lose their fucking shit. They cannot. They start taking to the streets in protest over this idea that people were going to be inoculated.
Has anyone even been inoculated other than...
Boylston's two enslaved men and his son. But they were like, are you fucking kidding me? Absolutely not. We can't make this. We can't allow this to happen. And this was America's first ever anti-vaxxer movement.
Sounds familiar.
And it was all down to misinformation. A misinformation campaign. This is in the years before Facebook.
Yeah.
We didn't have Facebook yet. Whoa. But misinformation campaigns had just as much to do with vaccine resistance in the 1700s as they do today.
So this is just human nature.
Yeah.
To run with. Well, just to be afraid.
Yeah,
and then
totally.
To run with your own prejudices.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just, but also feel so certain about it. It is sad that it started with someone who does have scientific training in theory, at least. But that's how powerful emotions are.
Absolutely. You just need one person who claims to be an expert on something to tell you what you already
want to believe. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like today, people were dying these horrible,
these are all these
tragic
nurses who are like quitting because I don't have to be vaccinated. It's like, but now you don't have a career.
Well, you know what? All of these articles that are like 248 nurses quit because of this vaccine mandate in the hospitals. But when you look at the numbers, that the percentages are so low. Tiny, minuscule.
Because most nurses want to live.
Yeah. But they want to lead with these numbers that sound high when you don't put them in perspective.
Yeah. They're it's very, like very
99.5% of nurses were vaccinated already and didn't need to be persuaded.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because I was talking to my mom. She was telling me all these stats in Ohio. She's like, oh, these hundreds of nurses left the Cleveland Clinic. And I'm just like, Cleveland Clinic has a ton of fucking nurses. And I looked into it. It's a tiny fraction.
Yeah.
Tiny fraction.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, so they'll find new jobs because they don't belong in healthcare.
They shouldn't be healthcare professionals if they don't believe in modern science.
I think this is good.
Absolutely.
Because they're in the wrong profession.
This is a purge of people who shouldn't be in that profession in the first place.
Not only will they infect others, people are just so vulnerable when they're in the hospital.
It's not
that we don't need people who don't believe in basic science.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Science.
Whether they ever catch and spread COVID or not is besides the point. These are people who do not believe in modern medical technology.
But it's not even modern.
Science.
It's
from the 1700s.
Yeah. It's basic at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a foregone conclusion because it's so accepted.
Yeah.
This is not new.
Absolutely.
This is not... Yeah, anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just like today, all of these people were dying these horrible, awful, tragic, preventable deaths because they didn't want to believe in something that they couldn't really wrap their heads around. The one difference is that back then it was all happening because some shitty colonial racists couldn't accept that a black man thought up the solution. Despite all of the resistance against them, Cotton and Zebadiel decided they really wanted to keep trying. They really wanted to get as many people inoculated as they possibly could. I think a lot of it had to do with like the sort of experiment of it all. They wanted to see how it went down and what the difference would be in people who are vaccinated versus or inoculated versus who weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, they really were trying to make sure they could get as many people inoculated as possible. The population of Boston was around 11,000 people at this point, which is like, for a major city, nothing. But at that point, that was a big city at the time.
Okay, yeah.
For the colonies. 11,000 people, only 248 of them were willing to inoculate themselves. They tried it, though. 248 people, they got 248 people inoculated, which was significant enough that they could base sort of scientific research on this number.
Yeah, they could have a huge fucking control that didn't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Experimental
totally.
Population is very small, but yeah, the control is huge.
But so then, after doing this, Boylston was accused of recklessly trying to spread the disease on purpose by performing these inoculations.
Okay.
And he was thrown in jail.
But no one died.
A couple people died.
Oh,
like,
shit. Okay.
A very, very small percentage. Much smaller.
A couple out of 200 is still a small percentage.
Well, considering that 30% of people
who
were catching smallpox were dying. It was like something like 4% of the people who were inoculated.
That's nothing.
Nothing compared to 30% or even 15%. Yeah. So this epidemic lasted nearly 2 years and almost half the town came down with smallpox. Half of 11,000 people and almost 900 people died.
Oh my God.
Out of 11,000 people, almost 900 died.
Wow.
So like
10%.
Almost 10% of the city. So after the epidemic was over, Zebadiel and Cotton wrote a paper together about the safety and
effectiveness. I wish my name was Zebadiel.
Zebadiel. It's better than Cotton.
Better than Stephanie.
It's certainly better than Brad.
Yes. Go on, I'm sorry.
Where was I? Okay, so after this epidemic was over, Zebadiel and Cotton wrote a paper together about the safety and effectiveness of inoculation trials. And their data and writings, did you say data or data?
I say data.
Data and writings on the subject eventually helped to inspire the English physician Edward Jenner to create the first ever vaccine in 1796. At least partially helped to inspire him.
Okay.
He used cowpox virus, which was a related but less deadly virus, as a form of immunity against smallpox. And it worked. And after this, vaccination was seen as much safer than inoculation, so we switched over to that instead. It's basically the exact same process, but you were using cowpox instead of smallpox,
mm-hmm.
but doing it in the exact same way.
Yeah.
It just happened to be, luckily, inoculating yourself against cowpox could vaccinate you against smallpox.
Yeah.
So eventually Massachusetts became one of the first states in the nation to mandate smallpox vaccinations.
Yeah.
So this is the story of America's first anti-vax movement, and or at least anti-inoculation movement. But the story does not end there.
Oh, no.
But before we get any further buried in this story,
yes,
let's take a little break and grab another drink.
Take 9 plus 10 and we're live.
Let's get it, fam.
I'm one of your hosts, Hamish Lakhmi.
And I'm your other host, Aaron Conway.
And welcome to our show, The Third Wheel.
You know when you like crush on someone, you just sometimes act a bit like silly in front of them?
Pop, pop, Aaron.
You guys just roast each other.
Those are ugly topics to talk about and they're really uncomfortable. Being out of your comfort zone is where the growth happens.
There were children who were carrying guns to school. Children as in like 13 to 16 year olds. They used to carry guns to school. There were teachers who came before us who had been shot dead by the students.
I've realized significantly since before meditating and after meditating how much more I just notice things around me and realize things. And it makes life a lot more just beautiful.
So I live in between the seafood market where it's supposed to have first originated and the hospital where it was first sort of confirmed and diagnosed.
Like jumping on this podcast, the third wheel. Like, I love being the third wheel right now. It's fantastic.
All right. We're back with new drinks, different drinks.
Yes, we switched.
I needed something different. It's traitors. I really think if I had a different hard cider or a sweet cider, I would be super, not only willing, but interested to try how it tasted with something sweeter. But I think
it's a little too kombucha-ish.
Yeah. So we switched back to the cocktail from last episode. We're drinking another Pisco Punch because it's so good.
It's delicious.
And I had leftover pineapple gum syrup that I'm honestly probably never going to use again. Okay. So let's get back into the story now that we have different, more palatable cocktails that I just wanted. I like wanted down the whole thing.
Yeah. It's so
I mentioned there was a key moment in my story before that I sort of briefly mentioned but breezed past. Do you remember I mentioned James Franklin, the newspaper publisher who was printing these secret pamphlets that were spreading anti-inoculation mm-hmm. conspiracy theories? What I didn't...
That he was Facebook?
He was Facebook. Exactly, yeah. What I didn't mention, though, at that time when I brought him up before was that he had a teenage brother who was an intern at his newspaper. Do you want to take a guess on who his brother might have been? Early 1700s, like 1720s-ish. His name was James Franklin.
I don't know who that is.
His brother's name was Benjamin Franklin.
Stop it. Stop this.
Yes.
I want to get off this ride.
Yes. So unlike his brother, Benjamin Franklin loved science and technology.
Yeah, he was doing a lot of weird shit.
Yeah. We can at least speculate that he probably did not like what his brother was doing, spreading all of this misinformation about the latest medical technology. You know, we can't really say that for sure, but what we can say is that years later, when he had his own newspaper, when he moved to Philadelphia, according to one historian, he was America's, quote, foremost inoculation evangelist.
Ooh, okay.
Yes.
Look at you knowing science and promoting it.
But before he moved to Philly, when he was still in Boston, there was yet another smallpox outbreak in Boston in 1730. And at this point, Benjamin Franklin carefully studied and recorded how well the inoculated fared in comparison to those who were not inoculated. He wrote that only 4 died out of hundreds of people who were inoculated, while nearly 30% of those who weren't were dying from infection. Mm. So Benjamin Franklin knew firsthand just how important and effective vaccines were. Unfortunately, in 1736, Benjamin Franklin's 4-year-old son, Frankie, caught smallpox and died.
Frankie Franklin?
His name was...
Don't do this.
Francis, I think.
It's too much.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not into it.
Yes, Frankie
Franklin. I disagree.
He actually died of embarrassment.
Yes. That sounds right.
Yeah. But yeah, so he died of smallpox in 1736. And because Benjamin Franklin such a vocal proponent of inoculation, people who were opposed to this procedure started spreading all of these rumors that Frankie had actually died because he was inoculated. That was what caused his death, the process of being inoculated. When that was absolutely not true at all. And these rumors and all of this gossip about this got to be so bad, got to such a point that Benjamin Franklin, whose son had just died, had to take time from grieving and publish a retort. Yeah, in the Pennsylvania Gazette, just weeks after losing his son, he wrote in the Pennsylvania Gazette that he had intended to have Frankie inoculated against smallpox, but the boy had these really severe gastrointestinal issues, and he wanted to let him sort of get over it and regain his strength before putting his body through inoculation. Mm. So he never got around to it, even though he did plan to do it. He wrote, "Inasmuch as some people are, by that rumor, deterred from having that operation performed on their children, I do hereby sincerely declare that he was not inoculated, but received the distemper in the common way of infection. I intended to have my child inoculated as soon as he should have recovered sufficient strength from a flux of diarrhea with which he had long been afflicted."
Did he inoculate himself?
I'm almost positive he was inoculated by this point. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He regretted not having his son inoculated basically for the rest of his life.
Of course.
And he, years later, when he wrote his autobiography, he wrote, "I long regretted and still regret that I had not given smallpox to him by inoculation. This I admit for the sake of parents who omit that operation under the supposition that they should never forgive themselves if a child died under it. My example showing that the regret may be the same either way, and that therefore the safer should be chosen."
Yeah.
So basically he's saying, like, you might worry that if you get your kid inoculated, they might die, but it's much more likely that they would die if they caught smallpox. So just inoculate them.
Yeah,
exactly. So after this, he devoted even more of his life to, you know, medical science and helping spread the word about inoculation to colonial America. In the 1750s, he actually collaborated with a physician and started collecting quantitative data about how inoculated people fared versus those who weren't. In 1759, he published a pamphlet on the importance and effectiveness of inoculation, and he was especially worried about the idea that poor people wouldn't be able to afford to have this procedure done by a doctor.
Yeah.
He was really worried about that, so in this pamphlet that he wrote, he included instructions on how to safely inoculate yourself at home.
Whoa.
Because really, literally, at that point, all they were doing was making a cut and putting pus into their cut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure there was a little more to it than that, but it was something that someone could do on their own at home, at least if you were around infected people or had access to an infection. So around 1,500 copies of this pamphlet were distributed to the public free of charge. Because he really just wanted to make sure as many people got inoculated as possible. And then in 1774, Benjamin Franklin launched a program that offered free doctor-administered inoculation to the poor.
Wow, that's incredible. How did he, like, finance that?
I don't know. So 1774, it would have been before this was, you know,
a country.
Officially. So it wouldn't have been state-funded. That's a good question. I don't actually know. That didn't come up in my research.
But I assume he's like part of the landed class.
Yeah, absolutely. He ran his own newspaper in Philadelphia. Yeah. Yeah, he had money. But either way, all of Benjamin Franklin's data and writing on this subject likely helped to convince several other founding fathers to get themselves inoculated years before they ever signed the Declaration of Independence. Mm. Several founding fathers were inoculated because Benjamin Franklin was talking to them about this.
That's amazing.
Thanks to the mob mentality against inoculation, there was actually rioting in Virginia against inoculation in 1769.
That sounds about right. Yes. Virginia.
Rioting. But old Tom Jefferson.
Tommy J.
Yeah. Old Tommy J didn't have to worry because he had already been inoculated in Philadelphia by Benny F.
B. Frank.
Yeah. B. Frank. There we go. He was Frank.
Frank. Yeah.
Sorry, I tried. A swing and a miss.
It's okay. I love the swing.
Alcohol. Thank you very much. So Tommy J later wrote to a doctor friend of his saying that inoculation was the greatest discovery in medical history.
Because it was.
It literally was.
Accurate.
I mean, smallpox was like literally killing 30% of anyone who caught it.
Yeah.
And disfiguring those who survived.
All of those who survived had those marks, right?
Yeah. I think that varying some had degrees, it worse than others. Yeah, yeah,
varying degrees of the marks. But yeah, the photos are profound.
Yeah. And in his second term as president, Tiege began mandating vaccines.
I heard about this.
Imagine
and
that.
And I heard how well it went.
we'll have, that's for another day.
They mandated that everyone be vaccinated in Boston for smallpox, and people lost their fucking minds.
Absolutely, yeah. Over and over and over, every time.
Yeah.
So all of Benjamin Franklin's writings also helped to influence General George Washington's decision to mandate inoculation during the Revolutionary War. In the 1770s...
Wait, who?
O.G. Dubs.
Oh, thank you.
I was about to get there.
Okay, I'm just like, George Washington, yeah, sounds so who's familiar. That? I don't know.
New phone, who dis? Yes. So in the 1770s, smallpox was on the rise yet again in Boston. And was ravaging both British and American troops during the Revolution. And O.G. Dubs had survived smallpox as a child, so he knew that he was safe. He would be fine. But he was worried about his army. Many of them had not survived smallpox yet. This is wild. During the siege of Boston, the British were using smallpox as an early form of biological warfare.
What?
Yes.
But how?
They were forcing infected people to leave their homes and wander the streets, wouldn't let them home.
Wait. In the U.S., though?
They somehow found out that people were sick and, like, kicked them out of their homes so they had nowhere to go. And so they were, like, leaving Boston and in going out and, like, and so O.G. Dubs basically quarantined the army and wouldn't let anyone leaving Boston anywhere near them. But so quarantining the army wasn't quite enough. So he needed to have the entire army inoculated to keep them safe, whether they wanted to be or not.
They can find other professions.
Absolutely, yeah. And many historians believe that this strategy of forced inoculations within the military helped us win the Revolutionary War.
I believe that.
If it were not for a vaccine mandate handed down from George Washington, there might not be a land of the free and home of the brave to begin with. But so, as I mentioned before, a smallpox vaccine was invented in 1796, and basically we just swapped out inoculation for vaccination after this because it was a safer procedure.
Yeah.
Because cowpox was less deadly
than smallpox. Yeah.
In 1813, President James Madison, yet another founding father, passed the first ever major vaccine policy in American history. An act to encourage vaccination created a national vaccine agency and made it free to ship vaccine materials through the United States Postal Service so that all Americans can benefit no matter where they lived or what their circumstances. And then, at the beginning of the 20th century, the Supreme Court ruled that vaccine mandates were completely constitutional.
Good. Okay.
You do not have a constitutional right to spread disease in your community.
Because it is a public health menace. It makes no sense that you would have a constitutional right to kill your neighbors.
No. It's absurd that you think that you should.
But like, I was still, when you said that, like, I was still holding my breath. I'm like, oh, no. What did they say?
No,
what did they say? That, make it make sense.
Yeah. Okay. It was not seen as a political issue at this point.
Because it's not a political issue.
Yeah. And thanks to this, thanks to vaccine mandates across the country, smallpox was eradicated in the United States in 1949. And thanks to widespread vaccination efforts by the World Health Organization, smallpox was eradicated worldwide in 1980.
Wow, that's amazing.
It remains the only infectious disease to ever have been completely wiped out in world history, ever, by vaccination. And it might never have happened if Onesimus hadn't told Cotton Mather about inoculation. Of course, this is America, where we love to write important and influential Black people out of our history. But thankfully, people
are... But it's like world history. Yeah, like, he changed the world.
Yeah. Inoculation was around in the world before him, for sure. And but he the fact that the U.S. it up,
did it... No, he absolutely didn't think it up. It was just happening in his culture for probably centuries.
Yeah.
And also other cultures for centuries.
Before it got to West Africa,
but like,
for sure.
The fact that the U.S. used his information to like push out inoculation efforts.
Yeah. I mean, it took over 200 years, but yeah, we got there. Thanks to this one Black man.
Polio has been around for more than 200 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's still with us.
Yeah.
So this is a huge success.
Facts are facts, America.
Yeah.
But thankfully, people are finally starting to talk about Onesimus and spread the word about the contribution he made to modern medicine. I actually heard about this story through a Twitter thread.
No fucking way. Yes. Wow.
There have been Vox articles. There's been tons of articles about
him. I've never heard of this.
Yeah. In 2016, Boston Magazine voted Onesimus one of the, quote, 100 best Bostonians of all times.
Was he number one?
Nope.
Okay. That's garbage?
He Black.
You're right. He Black in Boston.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah.
He was, what was the number?
One of 100.
He was 100.
Somewhere in the, he was 100. Exactly. Whatever it was, he was wicked smart.
Yeah.
But either way, this is still a far cry from the recognition he deserved, but he's finally, his name is in people's mouths, finally, after 300 years.
Better late than never.
So I know that that story kind of jumped around a little bit. I jumped from Onesimus to anti-vaxxers to founding fathers.
But it was all related.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I hope that that was scandalous enough.
Oh, it was very scandalous. Yes. Like, my mind is blown.
Yeah, I read about this and I knew that, on this Twitter thread, and I was like, I have to talk about this. This is fucking wild that this all happened. That's it. That's the story. The end.
The end.
But also, please tune in to next week's minisode, where I'm going to be talking about why the fear of vaccines is still so prevalent in America, despite all of the advances we have made in medical science in the past 300 years. We no longer think that vaccination is a plot by Africans to kill white people. But we're still terrified of vaccination. Yes.
That was really good. Wow. That was so good.
I tried.
You succeeded. It was a really, really, really informative scandal.
Thank you.
Yeah, we needed that right now.
I needed that.
But yeah, our drinks are empty. I guess we're done, right? America's history is juicy. We just add really, really funky apple
cider.
Cider, right? Yeah, and then some really great rum. It makes a very funky, weird mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going.
We didn't know any better in the 1700s.
We didn't enjoy it, but we did enjoy it.
Oh, we absolutely did.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer. Podfather, we cannot do this without him.
This has been Tux Lurzel signing off.
Bye. Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram, because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.